Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Like I said, I'm Jordan. I'm an alcoholic.
Jordan.
So grateful to be here tonight. Welcome to the newcomers. Please stay.
Please.
With that being said, if you do stay, there is work to be done. So get ready to work. If you want what we have, you have to do what we do. And I was told that very on. I was told a lot. So I'll quickly just do my drunk history just so you know you can identify with me that I'm an alcoholic and not just someone who stands up here and, you know, is talking out of my ass. So my history with alcohol started when I was 14. Basically growing up, I was born into a family where my brother had rage issues and I took on the role of being the good kid. You know, I wanted to be the angel and I got attention from that. So I was always, I did theater growing up, and so that's how I got a lot of my praise, you know, just like at the end of shows, like I love the intense pressure of it, you know, like learning lines, meeting people, doing all these things, and I fed off of that. And so I have through this whole time watching my brother express anger and rage, and I don't express that, I just express like being good and wanting to be accepted by all of you. So like that's what I do to say that I'm an okay person, to be like, okay, and being Jordan, and like, that's it. And so by the time I got to high school, I was doing a show. We have these things called cast parties. And if you can imagine a bunch of teenagers and like the seniors just throw a box of liquor on the table and like, it's a free for all, you know? And at this point, I hadn't really drank. I grew up, my parents were in the entertainment industry. So I was always like looking at drugs and alcohol as like this cool, fun thing to do, you know? And I always iconoclast like women like Whitney Houston, Chaka Khan, who are just like living in their womanness, you know? And I was like, I'm every woman, you know? Like, that's who I want to be. Just like dancing around. And, you know, the minute I had my first drink, people were, I was like, I don't know what to drink. Like, what do I drink? And they're like, try a Smirnoff, you know? So then I proceed to have six, right? Because like, that's what we do. Because the first taste tastes really good. So I want more. And so I black out my first night. And I know that I've heard that experience with a lot of us. And like, in my mind, in that moment, I didn't think anything was wrong with that because I was finally living, you know, like I was talking to that senior guy. We were playing beer pong. Like he knew my name or whatever he wanted to call me in that moment. But that was my name, you know. So many people think my name is Taylor, but it's not. It's Jordan. And so I was just like, yeah, you can call me whatever. And, you know, like that was my drinking. I would go to frat parties and tell people like I went to like USC, even though I didn't go there. I was like, yeah, I'm visiting from Yale, you know? And like the reality is I was at community college, like failing out. But like I always wanted to impress you. You know, when I got into the rooms, people said you have to stop judging your insides by other people's outsides. Because what I found was that like you could have the boyfriend, you could have the car, you could have this great job, and that would make me feel less than because I didn't have any of those things. You know, like I was always getting by. I've always been a really hard worker and I've always wanted to stand on my own two feet. And drugs and alcohol helped me do that for a while until I became like this person with no legs and I was like super shaky, but I was still walking, you know? And so finally what happened for me was, you know, after my drinking progressed and like what my progression looked like was, when I first started drinking, it was only on the weekends, only at these parties. By the time I turned 18, I was drinking, you know, 3 to 4 times a week. I'd introduced other drugs into the mix because they helped me stay awake and they helped me to stay skinny. So, you know, that was my get down. And so by the end of that, I graduated college. I didn't get the job I wanted. And I was like, pour me another drink. You know, and that was me. So I was working at a bar. I didn't have to pay for my alcohol. And if you've ever worked in the food and beverage industry, you know that people who work in restaurants know how to party. And it was always the party after the shift, you know, because there's so much high energy. You're like, I just dealt with all these people. I need a break. And so we'd go out all the time after these work parties. And for me, a lot of my drinking was also to just make it through, because if I need to be okay by you accepting me, I'm going to do whatever it takes to be at your party, to be at your whatever, to be there for you. And in moments, I was like, I don't want to. I'm tired. But drugs and alcohol helped me to like stay awake, to be there. And at the end of it, I was falling apart, you know, and I couldn't even see that because I didn't want to see it. And I didn't want my solution to be taken away. So for me, what happened was I got a DUI, and I always like to tell my DUI story because now it's funny, but in the moment I was like crying. So the cops are like, please, like, show us your ID. And I put my ID up to the window. My windows are rolled up. And they're like, ma'am, you're going to need to roll the window down, you know? And I'm just like, oh, shit. Like, I've been drinking. I've been smoking weed. My car smells, da-da-da. And they're like, step out of the car. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. And so they proceed to give me a few tests, right? One of them is count from 1 to 10. And in my drunken stupor, I say, don't you see the alumni plates on my car? I went to college. I'll do this in French. And so I proceed to count from 1 to 10 in French, right? And then they're like, here's a piece of paper, write the alphabet. And I'm like, okay, look at the license plate. So I'm standing there. It takes me 6 minutes. The only reason why I know this is because I have my police report, and I look at it every year on the anniversary that I got my DUI, because to me, that's my incomprehensible demoralization. Like, that's what it took for me to say, Jordan, you're not the good one. You're the jailed one, you know? And, like, for me, that's what I needed. I needed the law to stop me, because I would have never stopped on my own. Because I was, in my eyes, I was holding it together. And so, you know, they give me these tests. They lock me up in jail. And, like, no one ever tells you that in jail. Like, your parents don't know you're in there. I'm, like, screaming for help. I'm standing there, like, broken down. I'm like, get me out of here. I want to run for governor one day. And this woman turns to me and she says, nobody cries in jail. And I'm just like, I do. You know? Because, like, I do. I cry in jail. I am not meant for jail. And, like, this is where drugs and alcohol takes me. And, like, I need to remember that. Because I grew up in Los Angeles, and, like, drinking and driving is, it's not a part of the culture. It is a part of the culture, whatever. And so I would tell people this, and they'd say, it's okay. Like, that's just what happens here, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's just what happens here. And so I couldn't see that. But then, you know, they tell you, I had to stay sober for 3 months. And, you know, so I do that. I go through this program and I'm like, I can do this. I can stay sober for 3 months. I don't have a problem. And I'm sitting down with this counselor and I just begin to cry. And I don't know what's come over me. And I don't know if you all have experienced this, but it's just this moment where it's like, I can't put this show on any longer. And I felt that way in sobriety where I'm like, I can't put this show on any longer. And thankfully, through working the steps, having a fellowship that has grown up around me, I have like a cushion of people that I can call when I feel like I'm in those places. I have a sponsor that I can call. I have friends that I can call. I have meetings that I can go to, raise my hand and share that, you guys, I can't keep this together and I don't know what to do because I don't want to live this way anymore. And I didn't have that language before I got sober. Like, I didn't have the language of, like, self-care. I didn't have the language of awareness. I didn't have the language of, like, let it go, like, give it over to God. Like, I didn't have any of that language. And I got all that language in these rooms and through working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And through that, I have had a total spiritual awakening, you know, like, rocket into the fourth dimension. And I just want to tell you all how amazing that has been for me. Honestly, if you're new, I really do want to welcome you, because I just remember how I felt when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was broken. I was just incomprehensible in my actions, and I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know that there was this life that I could be free of, because all I'd known from the time that I was born that I just had to be okay. And the reality is like, this is life. Like, I'm not always going to be okay. Like, I have to live life on life's terms, not on what Jordan wants, not on what I think I deserve, just on how, like, life is handed to me. And I learned how to do that with all of you. So, you know, I come into the rooms and there's just like a light, you know.
Sorry.
Feel that light. Hear the light right there, y'all. You know, and I just feel the light that is around. You know, people, the first meeting I walked into was a 12 and 12 study. And for me, the literature is so important. You know, like, that's really where I find the solution. Like, all of you sharing is all really great, but like, this isn't Well People's Anonymous, and everyone has their own experience, strength, and hope. And I needed to find my own God, because what I knew from using and drinking was that I could definitely look to you for what I thought I needed. You know, like, I could sit in a meeting and hear people share all these things and just, I related, but at the same time, I wanted to make that my truth. You know, like, I've constantly always wanted to tell someone else's story because I think it's cooler than mine, you know, and like, just like have someone else's experiences because I don't want mine, because before I didn't see the gift in my experiences. And the longer I stay sober, the longer I work with newcomers, the longer I have friends reach out to me and say, like, I have a problem with drugs and alcohol. I need help, and I can share my experience, strength, and hope. And I see that that's my gift. Like, God gave me certain things that other people don't have. And when I get a chance to share them, then I'm living in my own right, you know? And before, I wanted to live in your right. I wanted to read a book on how to be perfect. I wanted to, like, take a million exercise classes because I thought that if I was thin, you'd love me, you know? But the reality is like, I am lovable right here, right now, in and of myself. And I didn't know that until I started working the steps and seeing that everything I've walked through in my life has led me exactly to this point right here. And in this moment right here, like, I am living my life, you know? Like, I just went to see Beyonce on Monday, okay? Like, want to talk about living and owning just who you are? Like, that is my life right now. I was with my friend who we both got sober at the same time. And through the whole concert, we're like yelling in my camera and we're like, this is what 3 years sober looks like. And we're just like living our lives, you know? Yeah, that's what we do. We were like, 3 years, what? Oh yeah, by the way, I have a sobriety date. It's December 20th, 2012. I only have one sobriety date. You don't need to have another one. You don't. You really don't. Yeah, you really don't. So what that looked like for me was taking suggestions, more so direction, you know, and when I first got sober, 1 minute. Okay, 1 minute. I just want to end with my favorite quote in the big book, which is on doctor's opinion. It's the last sentence in the doctor's opinion, and it says, and though perhaps he came to scoff, he may remain to pray. And for me, that's what staying sober has looked like for the past 3.5 years, is though life is falling down, though I come to scoff, though I don't want what I have, I continue to pray, and my God continues to open windows, continues to open huge doors. And I can walk through it. Like, you can walk through anything in this program. You just have to say something. So thank you so much for letting me share. Justin, kill it.
Sorry, it's all gray.
Thank you. Joel Osteen up here. Motivational speaker. All right. Move around the room. I'm not going to dance. Jeez. My name is Justin. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 28th, 2008. Got 8 years. Clap. Clap so much in Santa Clara County, it's like, it's kind of, I don't like it, so I'm glad you guys kind of tone that down. So, is this good? We good?
Yeah.
Thank you for your share, Jordan, that was great. I didn't remember your name, and then you said your own name and your share, so I'm glad you did that, so I was really worried about that until you did it. So, you talked about your own experience being your own experience, and when I got here, I made up experiences so that I'd fit into AA. That's how much my life sucked. So I didn't. I wanted to fit into AA. I got sober at 17. I got sober 3 months before my high school graduation, and I was not stoked. From what I know and what the work that I've done in AA, you mentioned another thing. It's like, I mean, there's so much levity here. We laugh about kind of the darkest stuff, and then we go through some heartache, you know, with each other. And, you know, there is work to be done, right? And there's a lot of work, but the work that I've done, though I don't like doing it, it's very rewarding for me. And one of those things is showing up here and speaking to you guys. Because I like it, because I like being hurt. I like listening to my own voice through a PA system, and I found something here, you know, and something has happened to me, and so I drank for about a year and 10 months. So I got, yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah, this guy's like freaking out. Yeah, I need AA. I need to be here, but you know. I started, as soon as I started, it just went nuts. And I, like my mantra throughout my whole life, even into sobriety, is anything worth doing is worth overdoing. And I remember the first time, you know, I don't know if I'm any different than anyone that grows up when they're a teenager. I think everyone feels uncomfortable and strange when they're becoming a human being. But I think there's like a twist that makes me a little different than other people. And I think it's a lot more grandiose. Like, I've always been like a spiritual seeker of things. I love hallucinogenics. Those are great. I really got into those. And, but I always like to adopt like language. I like to steal stuff from people and repeat it. I love to, speak in profound sort of like, nuances and stuff. And I think I've always been kind of that way, and I think everything needs to be profound and in rapid succession and a lot of it, you know. So I remember the first time I was hanging out, I was working as a concession worker at like a local pool, and couldn't get lifeguard, so I became the concession boy, and I was pissed off about that, and I felt less than. And these coolest dudes ever. These guys were so cool. One of them smoked weed every day, and he was on his way to go to Olympic trials for swimming.
Is that
cool? Like, he does drugs, and he's like, I'm going to be in the Olympics, perhaps. You know, like not a lot of people can say that. And so, and then this other guy who was an idiot, they didn't really talk to me much, and then they one day they kind of came up to me, and they were like, hey, do you want to go smoke some weed with us? And I remember my dad and my mom and everyone around me had a talk with me saying, you know, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do drugs or drink. And I was like, 10-4, got it, not going to do it. And I remember, like, they said, do you want to go do this with me? And I remember all the stuff I planned on saying, like, hey, my mom and my dad. Didn't do it. But what came out of my mouth was, yeah, let's do it. And so, you know, this started my journey into a spiritual awakening with drugs and alcohol. I'll tell you later. It's so funny to be like, if drugs are part of my story, like if you don't like it, then leave or call your sponsor. Like, you know, so, I mean, it's AA, so I'll respect that. I am an alcoholic, not a drug addict, but anyways, moving on. So, so we were hanging out and so for all those weed smokers out there, 420 people, you know, they packed a bowl, right? And completely, like the whole bowl, right? They put stuff in there, and I was looking at it, and I was like, this is, okay, cool. And they're like, all right, you're going to clear the bowl. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, that's not a lot. I remember, like, bragging. I was like, I can do more, you know? Like, it's cool. And I remember, like, you know, I took a hit, and like, and they're like, don't keep going. I'm like, okay, cool. Thought it was normal. And by the way, I was on a high dose of Adderall for ADHD. So, amphetamines, marijuana, woo, first experience, yeah, having fun. And so, I mean, I don't know, took five clears of the bowl, and just, I mean, it's like nothing's going on yet. And I'm remember my friend said, your breath smells. Take a tic tac. And we said, tac, tac, reverberated throughout the car. Tac, 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 tac. Whoa! So, I mean, I was on like amphetamines and, you know, so anyways, like I didn't know. And I was tripping pretty hard. And, you know, that led to drinking, a little bit of drinking that night, not too much. And that was the night where everything changed for me. Like everything was turned on its side. I mean, like, I was kind of an athlete, and I was like, I never applied myself. You know, everyone says that you should apply yourself more. And I was like getting pretty good grades. Everything was okay. You know, nothing was too bad. And from that point on, I quickly chose new friends to hang out with. Not those guys. Those guys, within a month, I was like, these guys are, you know, what they can't party. You know, like I'm like, these guys are way too, you know, they're lightweights. And so I remember I came back to school that year, and I remember just like not consciously doing this, but just remember starting to hang out with a dude that had a car. He was doing drugs. He was drinking a lot. He had access to booze, you know, fake IDs and everything. Without hesitation, I was hanging out with that guy every day. And, you know, it was just weed, and we remember when it was when MySpace was hot. And MySpace is a social media site like Facebook, but a little bit more confusing. And we would add random people, random girls from other cities, and we would go there and we would like party with like strangers, and so it was just fun. You know, there's nothing bad about it. And you know, it was fun. We started acquiring like new friends. You know, guys that one of the guys who burnt the local high school down. you know, that guy was like at the top of our prospect list of friends to hang out with. And, you know, that guy would taught me how to steal. You know, and I grew up in a good home. You know, I mean, I never thought of doing that, but for some reason, when I got alcohol in me, there's just it's not like I'm relaxed. I'm like ready to go, you know, like, and my mother, she the way she drank was that she drank a little wine or beer, never both together. And she would get a little like, you know, tired, and she'd like go to sleep. And it's like, what? You're not, what are you drinking? And I have a different reaction to alcohol than other people, including like her, you know. I sort of get like, I get like excited, you know. I'm like ready to go. I'm ready to start my night, you know. It could be 1 a.m. or 8 a.m, right? I'm just like, this is power, you know, powerful. So when I started seeing that work for me, there was nothing, you know. They talk about an invisible line in our literature, right? That you cross. That wasn't. I don't know where that was at all, or if that was existing for me, but. I couldn't stop. Excuse me, couldn't stop. I wasn't about to cry right there. I just sounded like water. I don't cry. So, I started getting arrested because of you know, I wasn't good at skipping school. I was afraid to ditch or skip school. I heard a lot of stories about people like, I didn't go to school for 2 years. And I'm like, how do you do that without getting sent away? You know, I don't know. But like, I got the first time I like stuck out of school, I got arrested, you know, with possession and stuff, and sort of, you know, get some more cases. And, you know, by that time I was, you know, doing ecstasy. I love ecstasy. I was a very big fan of the hyphy movement at that time. big fan of Mac Dre and every one of those guys. And, you know, we pour out a little bit on his birthday, you know. He's, you know, so those are my heroes. And so, like, it just became like a free-for-all where I would be sober, remorseful, like, you know, a different kind of person around my parents, just like completely like, you know, I thought I was pretty good at lying. Maybe sometimes I wasn't, but like I would convince them. I would say like, look, like that, I did a reverse intervention on them one time. Like, I got arrested, and I remember I was like, you know what? I got to take the reins here. This is how I'm going to get what I want. So I was like, hey guys. And they were discussing what to do with me, and I walked in the door, and I was like, hey guys, let's talk, all right? I am not. not doing good. You know, I made some bad decisions, but I will turn it around, and you don't have to worry about a thing, right? And so they're like, okay. I remember, and that was after I went to the same Smart and Final store. I'm in Oakland, not in like Smart and Final. But I went there earlier in the day on a Sunday, and I stole some rum, and more people showed up and started drinking my rum. Right, so that's that. So I was like, let's go back to the same store and steal some more. So I thought I was good at I was a good thief, which I think I was in terms of like stealing something, but in terms of being seen, I wasn't good at that. So, immediately walked in and cops there before I even walked out. Right, and so all my friends left and. I'm sitting there, and I'm like fake crying to the cop, like, I'm so sorry, like, I'm so stupid, and I shouldn't have done that. Let me go. And he's like, no, man, we're not going to let you go because we know you hit this up. It's just, you know, no. So so that was before the little reverse intervention, and I remember telling my friends, I was like, look, and I kind of meant it, you know. I really wanted to stop drinking because I just, nothing good happened, you know, when I drank. And I would sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes go into it thinking I'm going to have a couple. I'm going to have a few, and I won't do, I'll do one pill of ecstasy, you know, and I'll be good, and I'll be able to not get into some trouble. But I always overshot the mark, and that was something that just went into a blur, and there's no way I could control it. I didn't know that at the time. I wasn't really, like, thinking about any of that stuff, you know. And so at that time, my dad started bringing me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so he had been kind of involved a little bit, and he brought me to a meeting, and I was really high, and I was sitting there, and it was weird, man. It was really weird. And I was 16, and a group of men who had, you know, drank at least on average 20 to 30 years each, you know, and I'd been 6 months into my drinking, you know. And I'm like, what? This is really sad, and I'm awesome. And these guys are so different than me. And I remember I went, but I told my friends, I was like, you know, hey guys, look, I'm done partying, you know, like, you guys can go do whatever you want, I'm done. And they were like, okay. And they kept calling me, hit me up. And I remember, so that, after that Sunday, a few days kind of pass, and on Friday night they text me and they're like, hey, so you want to go to a party tonight? And I'm like, nope, sober guy, not doing that at all. And so they came over and they're like, hey man, so what's up, you want to go to the party or not? And I'm like, I appreciate you guys being great friends and like trying to, like, you know, keep asking me, but I pride myself of, like, they used to make me steal, right? And so, like, I was like the steal guy, so the thief. So they were like, well, we need to get some booze and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, well, you know what, guys, like, I'm done with it. So I remember I told them off, and I felt so good about it, and I was like, I think I got this thing. And I remember they left, and they kept texting me pictures. This is right when picture messaging came out. They date me a little bit. So, hey, what's up? I know her. So they sent me a picture of, like, these two girls, and it was, like, really, like, pixelated, right? It was, like, really horrible, and they're like, we're at a party. And, oh, man, like, picture messaging? And I was like, yeah, damn, you know, and I told them I can't go. This is not good. I'm gonna do something bad. And they, and so I remember I was eating a bowl of SpaghettiOs. SpaghettiOs. that's my joke. And I remember I was like drinking a ginger ale, and I was thinking, gin, ginger ale, are they related? Are they in the same family, or is there some sort of root that comes from, I don't know, you know, I'm like thinking about this. It's important you can just like search it online, right? But, and I was like, I wonder if gin and ginger ale, how they taste together. I don't know if you guys have read the book, there's a story in the book where a guy didn't have a thought of drinking. He thought he would, with his sandwich, pour some whiskey into milk because it wouldn't hurt him on a full stomach, right? And he had sworn off drinking. And so that my mind had this little twist. It was like, yeah, put some gin and some ginger ale. They're, you know, hey, related somehow. And so I remember I drank it and drank on it more, and the experiment worked so well, I tried it a second time. And so some triple C later, I don't know if anyone knows triple C, you know, like cop medicine and stuff, and robo-tripping. I did that and some other stuff, and I was off for the night, you know. And so I came back, my parents were like, yeah, so what's up? Like, what happened? And my dad told me, he was like, you either have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous and do it, or you're going to a Scientology camp. So I chose AA. So that was like the first motivation. It's like, I'm going to do it to get them off my back, right? And, you know, I mean, that's what kind of got me around AA. And so I remember going to that meeting with a bunch of older people and just like, these guys are lame, I'm so cool. And there's one guy who was 19 years old at the time, and he had a couple years sober. He got sober at my age. He was, you know, the closest to me in terms of what he'd been through. And he didn't really work steps that much. He kind of like wasn't a big proponent of it. He wasn't gung-ho about it. He said he kind of actually didn't like the big book, you know. And I'm like, ooh, a rebel, cool. So we would just pontificate and talk about nothing. And so he was my sponsor for a while. And I remember we would talk about theories of why we were depressed. And then we just came up with, we're just depressed. You know? And, you know, I changed friends. I mean, I was struggled for a while to be in and out, you know. I didn't cause any scenes or anything, but I just, like a lot of people like to focus on drama, right? And like I said, like you were talking about, I wish I had a really cool, like, story. And I remember going to that meeting and making up a ton of stuff, like, I was a heroin junkie at one time in my life, you know, and, like, I'd been to prison. I was 17, you know, like, I didn't know that. You know, so they just were like, okay, because I felt like I didn't fit in AA, you know, and it's just sad. And but this guy would have me over to his house, which was weird because I was like, this is a guy sober and he's bringing me to his house. This is weird, but I was never sketched out with like people that were doing drugs and like, hey, come to my house, I got drugs and shit, you know. And I'm like, cool. But this guy, I was like, ah, this guy's, I don't know what he's gonna do to me, you know. And spiritual literature and stuff. I was like, nah. I was like, this is weird. And I was very happy. He was really nervous too and anxious. So I was like, this is even weirder, you know. And, but this is where everything changed for me, right? We were sitting down and we didn't pop the book open and we didn't see a line out of the book. He started reading another book to me, or actually had me read it, right? And it was like a teenage alcoholic book from like a doctor, right? And I don't even know what it's called. I don't even know what was in the book. But I remember just speaking to him and reading some of that. And for the first time, I was like, wow, I'm like him. And I'm like someone else. I'm not separate from. And that was the beginning of a shift, right? What do we call it? Spiritual awakening, spirit upheaval, you know, however you like to call it, conscious, you know. I can go on if you want. I can change, you know. But something changed that night. I kept drinking after that. It's not like I didn't want to drink anymore. You know, I didn't want to drink, but I wanted to drink, right? It's the alcoholic sort of thing. And, you know, I don't know. I'm very lucky that I got here when I did. And I kept drinking, and I changed girlfriend. She was the problem. Her brother was the problem because he was 6'4 and 300 pounds and threatened to kick my ass all the time. And he was what was making me nervous and making me drink. You know, that was the problem. And so, I don't know. The last time I drank, it wasn't profound. It wasn't crazy. It was just me partying with some guys. Sort of old friends that I'd hung out with before that were kind of not bad guys. And I remember drinking with them, and they were like, hey, man, remember, you were in AA, right? Weren't you doing AA? And I was like, it's like a part-time thing. You can be a part-time person. And they were like, okay. And it was just weird. And the last time, you know, it worked, and I got drunk, and I woke up with, I just remember the cigarettes in my back pocket were all crushed, and I just remember taking them out, and just like, oh, God. And I got driven home, and, you know, like I said, it's not high drama, not a lot of stuff, like, you know, I really thought, and I think sometimes when you get here, you think you need to do a lot of stuff, like get arrested a bunch of times to be an alcoholic, which is just silly, right? I mean, I just didn't get caught, you know, and it doesn't matter if I didn't break. Well, I know people that just isolate and drink alone, and they don't do anything, so they're not going to get arrested. And it's silly, though. I mean, my mind is not always my friend. And it doesn't tell me some good information for me to follow. And one of them is, and with a part of alcoholism, what I read in the book was that a part of my alcoholism is a mental obsession that is attempting to convince me that I'm not what I really am, which is an alcoholic, which is someone who is unable and hopeless when it comes to quitting drinking on his own or controlling the amount I take after I start. And so, you know, when I got here, I just hung out and I didn't do much, and I hung out with that guy and we kind of did steps. But you know, at the moment, I kind of woke up and I was like, I don't think I'm going to stop drinking. I remember thinking that. And it wasn't something that someone told me or something I read. I just had that sort of realization. And I came here and I hadn't had a drink since. It wasn't really a decision. I woke up and it happened again. And since then, I believe something greater than myself has kept me sober. I really do. Because there's a lot of reasons to drink that I have come across, and like, I have, like, my cuticles are all weird, right, and they peel back, and I want to drink, you know, like, oh, man, you know, they hurt, and some other stuff, and, you know, like, it's always, so, you know, The more I've been in AA, I've done the steps a lot of times, right? And for all the good and wrong reasons, right? To be king of AA, right? To be a humble, sort of quiet servant of AA, and people will, you know, come visit me at my castle when they need guidance and strength. And I've sworn it. I've said I don't like AA. I don't want to be here anymore. You know, you guys don't do anything for me. And you know, and I'm still here. You know, I'm kind of a buffoon. And the steps don't cure buffoonery. I'm kind of weirder now that I'm more sober. But like you said, you know, I'm like living. I'm having fun with life. And that wasn't the case when I wasn't drinking, when I was in the grips of my alcoholism. See, and I was talking to someone last night, a new person, and she was saying, I got 8 days sober, and she's been in and out, really had a hard time. And she was like, this is where it gets really hard, you know, at 8 days. And I was like, that's right. Some people aren't as lucky. This sounds horrible, but it's like, some people are lucky to drink, right? Because I think the real alcoholic death is sober, stone cold, dry, just white knuckling it, you know what I mean? There's no power at all. Just you, confused, trying to diagnose your own problem, trying to figure out what's wrong with you, trying to use other things and people to make you sort of whole. And, you know, I'm not saying I don't do that, but it's like that's my condition. And it's very simple. It's not complicated, and even if I, like, say that, I'll complicate it tomorrow, you know, when I wake up. I forget really easily. I forget all the time. I mean, you guys that have utilized our tools in AA and been here, you understand that, like, you know, you could be having the best day, your 10th step in, or you sponsor 6,000 people, or, like, you're just feeling it, you know, and then you wake up the next day, and it's just like, you're not motivated to do it, you know. That's just the way it is. I wish it weren't like that. I wish I hit a peak in AA where I stayed there and I just was so enlightened, and you know, people could just, you know, oh God, Justin's amazing, and like, he is the one to speak to about anything, and he's very dateable as well. And boy, is he handsome. It's like, it's not going to happen. And so, you know, I moved to Los Angeles for a little bit, and you know, to pursue career stuff. And I did it because I wanted to change. I wanted to do a geographic because I didn't like where I was at all. And I thought that going to another place, there would be a new me, you know. And then it was the same me. And I went there, and it was just so strange. And you know, drinking sounded like a good idea. And when I say that, it doesn't sound like a good idea, but here's the thing about my alcoholism, how I see it, is that it's gonna come at me from the flank, right? I'm not gonna know I'm doing it. It's just, because remember when I did it, I would just do it, and that the book talks about like a mental blank spot, right? Like I'm going through my day, and then like, and then I'm like, and then I'm like, wait, what? You know? It's never like, should I drink or not? You know? It's just, that's how it is. And I am, the best news I have for you is that you're doomed. You know? You're not, you're hopeless. And that's the truth. But some people are going to die, you know? I don't like that at all. I don't want people to die. And, you know, so at the time I was in Los Angeles and I was, my brain started like, you know, seeing these things like, you know, hey, you only drank for this long and, you know, he didn't really do much, you know? He didn't get arrested like that guy and be at meetings, right? Like, oh, that guy is worse than I am. Non-alcoholic he is. And, you know, it was subtle, right? And I didn't recognize that, of course, because if I could recognize it, I would change it and I would just not think about it anymore. But that's something that I can't help. And I dove into the steps with a guy down there. I saw at a retreat, and that's my sponsor now. I've gone through a lot of sponsors, and he, to me, I think is, I like him. And I remember meeting him, and he just said some great stuff. And I remember as I hung out with him, I realized how human he was, and it sucked, you know, like, I remember we were, after I dropped my fifth step with him, we were at a pizza parlor, right? He's from the East Coast, and pizza parlors are big, I guess, over there. And he knows, like, the standards of pizza parlors. And we walked in, and I remember, like, me and my sponsor, you know, like, we just dropped my fifth step, and he helped me, and I'm just, like, feeling, you know, okay, pretty good, and, like, at peace. And he was like, do you guys have a bathroom? And he was like, oh, no, we don't have a bathroom. And he's like, what the f- are you talking about? And he's like, you guys need a bathroom. And he started going off on him. And I was like, oh, my sponsor, what? This man I trusted is an evil monster, you know? He's lied to me. And I'm like, I had this crisis in my head, you know? But he's just a drunk. He's just a person. And, you know, he doesn't give me real advice. And when he does, he always says, I don't know if this is the right advice, but maybe you should do this. I don't know, you know? And so... pray about it and just, I don't know, do whatever you want. And that's what he says. And the other day I talked to him, and I remember telling him about all the good stuff that was going on, right? Because there are some positive things that are happening. And I remember telling him all the good things. And, like, I got this going on, this is going on, I got this position. And he's like, wow, it sounds like everything's going great. And that was just a comment of him saying that. And how I took it was like, oh yeah, you're great. Don't need me, right? Like, don't need anything. And I was like, and I started thinking like, oh yeah, well, here's all this stuff that's bad, you know, like, so this, and I was thinking too much about this, and this person thought, you know, and he's like, yeah, okay, never mind. Talk about me. And so, I just have to find something wrong. So I'm still like, you know, I'm still quite a little goofy. So it's not, that plateau is never going to come. And, but through that round of steps that I did, right, you know, the first one was amazing, and it just changed me, because it was the first time I'd ever just been in that state, right? I didn't want to drink. The obsession had been removed, but I was constantly discomfort and disease, and just there was nothing that could do anything for me. And I remember the steps, you know, it's not really about feeling good, because that's kind of what I did out there when I drank, is just wanted to feel good. I'm always going to try to feel good. That's never going to stop, you know. But I think that being conscious of that and seeing that, you know, like, I've got to do whatever I've got to do anyways, you know, yeah, because there's a part in the book where it says we can't fool ourselves about values. And I remember just this last time it kind of stuck out to me, right? Like, what do I value? I value my family. I value my friendships. I value a career that I'd like to pursue. And I value Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, you know, I need to show up for that. And I need to be there. And I need to continually sort of see where I've been wrong and do 10, 11, and 12 the way I do it. And just show up and just be there as I am. And so through that process, I had some amends that I had sponsors tell me I didn't have to do certain amends, which was great at the time, right? because I was like, whoa, this guy's on my side here, you know? And then some other ones that my one sponsor said, you know, the never list, and I just never did them. So, you know, I don't know if everyone's familiar with, like, the now, never, or later, whatever. And I did that, and I had some unfinished amends. I didn't even think about those, but my sponsor kind of said, hey, look, why don't you revisit any amends that you thought you never made? And so I went back into that. And he didn't really coach me through it or tell me which ones to make or not. I went through and I just realized, I was like, you know, I was at that point where our book talks about there's two alternatives to face, right? Blot out the consciousness over a horrible situation or accept spiritual help. And in that moment, I just felt there was only two options left, right? Do that or this. Not like chill and maybe get a girlfriend, right? Like, it's like not. I can't do anything else, right? And I was very spiritually unsound. And just terms of me not at all having peace. And so I remember going into those amends, and I did a lot of them. And I heard some people had hired a private investigator to find the rest of their amends. So me, being a very all-or-nothing kind of guy, I said, I'll do that. So I called, I Googled private investigator, and the first one was Nighthawk Investigations. And I'm like, boom, called him. And this sexy answer voice lady was like, hey, Nighthawk Investigations, can I help you? And I'm like, hi, I'm looking to find someone that I don't know where they are. And he's like, oh, you want to talk to Wayne? I'm like, I guess. Like, what? And so I ended up talking to this guy, Wayne. He's like, he was 500 pounds, and he was like, maybe like wanted to be in the CIA but never made it. And him and I worked together for months, and we found some people. And some of them didn't respond, but I found them. And, you know, this guy's used to getting people, you know, to try to serve papers to people. Or, like, fine cheating spouses, you know, like, I can just imagine this guy, like, in the tree, you know. But he was like, you know, no one's doing this kind of stuff, so, like, I don't know, like, he gave me a discount, you know, and so it's great. And I didn't find most of the people, but it was I just wanted to do it, and I wanted to get free, and I wanted to have those unfinished things, because someone told me they might have a part in maybe my current unmanageable stuff, right? Or maybe some stuff that I'm not really wanting to rely on God with. Because I don't know, like, you know, I don't expect anyone that's new to start trusting a higher power, because they've only trusted drugs and alcohol and themselves. But now they don't trust themselves, you know? And if you have trust issues, other people have trust issues with you too. So, welcome to the club. And so, you know, trusting someone's the first part of this whole thing, right? Really feeling like someone is going to be a closed mouth friend or someone that won't, you know, share your stuff with people. I don't say like one-on-one interviews with sponsors, but, you know, if something moves you and you like, if you see someone that's happy or enjoying something or really doing work, you know, pick those people. You know who they are. You know the people that are doing it. And you can't make someone, you can't manufacture willingness. You can't make people be willing. I really want to, because there's some people I really like that I want to get sober, but they can't never stop. And there's people I don't like that are sober. And, you know, with that. So, you know, I did those amends, and I still got a few left that I don't know where they are. But, you know, like, I don't know, like, if I try to analyze it, it'll just sound really, just, it won't sound good, and I can just tell you that, like, just doing it is a practice of faith, and with that, I've been able to have more faith in the process of AA. I tensed up with a 70-year-old woman from Los Angeles, and she's, like, she's a widow, and she's, like, on dating sites all the time, and she's, like, talking about all these experiences with dudes, and she's so cute, and she's, like, I don't know, she's my buddy. And it's like, I would never have guessed that would be my, like, 10-step friend. And so she's so funny. Like, I'll call her about, like, a resentment or something. And she's like, I'll be like, I hate him so much. And he did this. And she's like, shut up. Like, you know.
You're so selfish. It's all about you, right?
You know, she's not that abrasive. But she's like, she laughs at me, you know, when I'm
so mad.
And I guess I need that. I know who I can call to co-sign my stuff and just say, like, you're right, you know. They suck, and you're right. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's not good for me. So anyways, if you're new, this is a way of life that, you know, it's so much better than the way I was living before. And it continually gets better. But the only key, the only part of this whole thing is willingness. Like, you just need to be willing. That's it. You don't need to have anything other than that, you know. You might have some really cool philosophy of God, but just I don't care, you know, like keep it to yourself, man. You may understand how AA works, and you know, trust me, I know, like I'm that way. So, but if you're willing, you know, like you can't manufacture it. You know, the people that come here and they've already kind of changed already. They come here and they're willing and they're doing stuff. And so, real quick, just to finish it off, like, so my mother passed away 3 months ago, right? And I came home from Los Angeles to take care of her, and I was able to spend a whole year with her, and she passed, and we fought, you know, and it's bad, it sucks, and I don't want to talk about that a lot, but I can tell you that, you know, that's the hardest thing I've ever had to go through ever, you know, and I didn't want to drink at all, so, you know, newcomers, there's no excuse, you know. Call me up. I'll tell you where this guy Wayne is, my PI. You'll find any amends you want. No excuse. If you do this work, you'll be able to stay through everything. You know, it's not my doing at all. It's not because, you know, of anything that I've come up with or concocted. It's this program and these people that don't necessarily tell me what I want to hear, but what I need to hear, and really, really help me so I can grow on my own and rely on a God on my own and go out there and have fun. And really be somewhat, in a way, self-sufficient, or God-sufficient, right? Whatever you want to call it. So, with that, thanks for letting me speak.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.